This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Renee Montagne.
And I'm Steve Inskeep. The international interest in Tibetan medicine may be driving some plant species toward extinction. That's just one concern of an American who is studying the effects of climate change and over-harvesting on mountain vegetation. Her name is Jan Selleck. She's working with a team of Tibetan and Chinese scientists, and we will focus on their efforts in part two of a National Geographic radio expedition to China. Elizabeth Arnold reports on the past and future of Tibetan medicinal plants in the Yunnan province.
The Kunming Institute of Botany is a cluster of lush botanical gardens and concrete laboratories on the outskirts of Yunnan's capital city. This is where scientists analyze and synthesize China's wealth of medicinal plants. But the institute's deputy director, Yang Yangping, says none of that work can happen without first learning traditional uses.
It's amazing. I have had a background of the plant taxonomy, and so it's not so difficult for me to identify this species, that species. But the local partners, they know more about the plants. Mm. I feel most exciting is a shared knowledge with the villager and also the Tibetan doctors.
The Chinese government's goal is to develop a profitable pharmaceutical industry here in Yunnan. But Yang says within the institute, there's also a firm commitment to conservation.
We have the responsibility because the plants is such as the endemic plants, is only available in this area. So in these regions, we have a more responsibility to keep those species in our Earth Village.
Conservation is already built into Tibetan culture, where plants are considered both medicinal and spiritual. High in the eastern Himalayas, construction work mars the Buddhist tranquility of Sum Se Ling, the largest monastery in Yunnan. Less than a decade ago, this place was in ruins, the result of benign neglect during China's Cultural Revolution. But today, its whitewashed walls and gold leaf are meticulously being restored. And some 800 monks now live here, testimony to the revival of Tibetan culture in China. With that revival has come renewed interest in traditional medicine that's rooted in Buddhism. The Chinese Institute of Botany has partnered with Jan Selleck, an ethnobotanist from the Missouri Botanical Garden who studies plants and their cultural uses. Selleck points to a particularly ornate Buddha holding a blue bowl in one hand and a plant in the other.
He is the foundation of Tibetan medicine, and he is also the one that people come to pray to if they're ill. So it's not just, you know, plants that are ground up and you take as medicine, but it's a whole belief system that goes with the Tibetan medicine.
That system holds in high esteem the monks here, clad in orange robes, who chant and sway near the medicine Buddha. But traditional doctors also hold a special status in this culture. 100 miles northwest of Sum Se Ling is a tiny Tibetan village carved into a hillside. Chin Drew, a 70-year-old doctor, lives here in the largest and most elaborately decorated wooden house. Village children roam freely through what seems to be more community center than private home. The smell of candles made from yak butter is stifling. The doctor gestures to small vials of dried plants tucked into the niches of an ornate shrine. Tibetan translator Norbu explains it's medicine.
So this is like made of sacred plants. If you put in the shrine, and this can get a lot of power, you know, transfer the power.
Oh, this is getting power. Yeah. This isn't an offering. This is getting power from the shrine.
From the shrine, yeah. Okay.
And does he collect the plants for his medicines, or does he get the plants from someone else? How does that work?
He collected by him own, by himself in the mountain.
So he's still going up there?
He doesn't trust the plant which are collected by people.
The doctor, a lean, agile man with a dark lined face, quietly lifts a conch shell from the shrine and blows.
The sun represents the sound of Buddha, the founder of Buddhism. His name is Sakyamuni. Yep. So represent his voice.
In the peaks high above this village where Chindru does his collecting, he's noticed a change. Some species have become scarce, others have simply vanished. With Chindru at her side, Salik and a field crew of Chinese and Tibetan scientists have been studying alpine vegetation. While her primary focus has been climate change, Salik says over-harvesting is a much more immediate threat, given growing international demand for medicinal plants.
It's huge. You know, anytime I tell people that I'm studying Tibetan medicine, then all of a sudden, oh, do you know where I can get a hold of this or that?
Really?
You know, a lot of people come to me for as a supplier, and I'm not willing to do that.
Sure.
You know, that's not my job, and I'm worried about the effects of that. So
there's people out there harvesting this stuff.
Yeah, and there are people that are harvesting it, and there are people that are harvesting it in different ways. The Tibetan doctor that we're working with here harvests a little bit for his patients and, you know, for local use, and that doesn't seem to have a tremendous effect on the plant populations. But then you get these commercial harvesters that are out there for a much larger market, and that is what's really causing problems.
More than half the species, some 6,000 plants in this province, are used for medicinal purposes, and an estimated 4 billion people worldwide are buying them. But fortunately, within Tibetan culture, the underpinnings of conservation already exist. The buses of Chinese tourists and ox carts of Tibetan pilgrims announce a roadside rest stop that is both scenic and sacred. The view from this pass is of Kawa Karpo, one of 8 sacred mountains in the Tibetan region. The pilgrims have smears of dirt on their foreheads from prostrating in the direction of the stunning snow-capped peak. But Salik gestures to a wooded hillside across the busy street.
Behind us are the sacred oak forests, and they have huge trees. We did an initial study where we found out that plant diversity, useful plant species, endemic plant species are much more common in sacred sites than in non-sacred sites.
They're pockets of biodiversity protected by religion in a rapidly changing landscape. With growing demand for these plants, Salik's aim is to partner with traditional doctors like Chindru, who are influential, and to encourage the Tibetans and Chinese to harvest plants in a more sustainable way. In short, advise them as to when, where, and how best to harvest without wiping out the species.
The Tibetans keep reminding me that sacred sites are a much greater thing than just a conservation site, which I fully acknowledge. I mean, for them, it's a connection with the ethereal, with eternity, with the universe, which is admittedly much greater than conservation, but it works for conservation too, so that we don't have to just come in and set aside lands and disrupt traditional practices, but we can use traditional practices for conservation purposes.
For Radio Expeditions, I'm Elizabeth Arnold.
Tomorrow, we'll look at one of the most desired plants in Yunnan, a disappearing species of snow lotus. Radio Expeditions is a co-production of NPR and the National Geographic Society. And if you'd like to follow Elizabeth Arnold's trek in the Eastern Himalayas, just visit npr.org.